Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Coach Kelly, Therapist Kelly.
That's okay. You are like a coach also.
Yeah, kind of.
You know what's so weird?
Tell me.
This is the first time since we've started our show,
yeah,
a little over a year ago, that I can't ask you what did you do this weekend because we spent the weekend together.
It was so much fun. Can we talk about it?
Yeah,
it was amazing.
It was my birthday.
Yes!
And it was awesome. And it was a reasonably big one, I suppose. And so we just thought it would be really fun to have a couple of friends hang out with me down at Lake Kachuma. It was... Go ahead. Share your experience.
I was obsessed. Obsessed. So we stayed in this yurt. Okay, and ever since Dr. Deborah told me about this yurt, I've like been obsessed over it. And it was everything that I had imagined, which is so funny because it's like a teepee that has like a bed in there.
Right.
But I loved it. It was like so simple and lovely, and I slept so well. I probably had like one of the best night's sleeps ever.
Really?
I know.
That is awesome.
Isn't that funny?
Oh, I'm so glad.
I think it's because my kids weren't there. That's really the reason.
Well, sure. But then all the, you know, when you're out in nature too, it's so special to me anyway. You
yes.
know, we had the lake and it was pretty green and, you know, just in the area. The whole Solvang, Los Olivos,
yes.
Buellton. We did some fun wine tasting, which you had never done before.
I'd never done it. It was so much fun. It was so funny. I'm going to share about how my husband would drink. He would. So wine tasting, as we've learned, is supposed to be like, you know, you like swoosh around the wine in your mouth and you talk about the tannins and like, you know, and here's my husband like taking them like shots, you know, and he's like, they all taste the same.
But he says, but they're good.
Yeah, exactly.
I like them all. It was so funny.
It was great.
So, yes, he was wine shooting instead of wine tasting.
It was. It was really, really funny.
But those places, I love them because they're so adorable. They have so many trinkets. I mean, you can spend an hour just looking around at all the little tchotchkes
so cool.
that they sell and all that kind of stuff. So
well,
it
I
was
heard,
a really special weekend.
I
thank
heard
you.
That's, oh my God, thank you. I invited myself. the movie Sideways was in Los Olivos, somebody told me. Remember that movie mm-hmm. a long time ago? So that makes more sense to me now.
Yeah, the wine trail right off outside of Los Olivos.
Yes, mm-hmm. exactly.
Like Fess Parker Trail or something like that.
So cool.
Yeah. Yeah, but it was fun. So it was really awesome. So I'm just like trying to wind down from that. It was a lot of activity.
Wasn't it?
We did a lot.
And we really did.
Yeah.
It was hard to like, but for me, it was actually quite relaxing in a lot of ways. Like,
sure.
But so it was hard to like kind of get back into life as always, you know, after you have like a little vacation and a break.
I think it's always really important too, because we're going to talk about some heavy stuff today, but hopefully
yeah.
in a way that, you know, people can hear it is, you know, when people are down and out, go spend some time in nature. You know,
yes.
nature just has a way of being really healing.
100%. Well, they say that about ADHD, that like one of the natural cures is being outside.
I'm actually going to a continuing education workshop today at an equine therapy place, so I get to hang out. I'm actually going to get continuing education credits while petting horses.
No.
I love it.
Oh, that is so cool.
I asked you to go, but you couldn't go.
I can't go, but that sounds so much fun. It sounds so great. I love that. I love animal therapy. I really believe in that.
Me too.
Someone was telling me about a chicken that was an emotional service animal on an airplane.
A chicken? Oh.
Like a big chicken.
A big chicken.
Isn't that so funny?
Gosh.
I believe it.
Did the chicken lay eggs on the trip?
I hope not. Imagine if you were sitting next to the other side of the chicken. Like, it's like you, the stranger, the chicken, and then the person who needs the chicken. Like,
that is hysterical. So we just want to remind our listeners, if you do want to call into the show today, we have a great guest. We call at 323-203-0815. Again, 323-203-0815. But before we introduce our fabulous guest today, we'll do a little recap of last week, unless
yes.
Kelly, do you have anything else to share from
no.
the week? No.
No.
We're like on a good run.
Yeah, exactly.
So we had somebody that you've known before who'd
yes.
been on our show, psychic Madame Fleur, who I just couldn't believe how like adorable
right
she is. She's just so adorable.
So cute. And
oh
like,
my.
Yeah, she's just, and it's so weird to me that like someone can like seem so normal and then they have this like amazing gift. It's really cool.
Well, you know how we stereotype, right?
Yes.
So if I saw her at like a party or a coffee place, it would never occur to me to go, that is a, she is a psychic.
Of course.
You know? And I don't even know what my image is of what a psychic should look like.
I feel like it's like the big earrings, like, you know,
a little
like
bit off.
Yes, exactly.
Just as cute as a button.
Yes. Yeah. And it was really cool. I thought she was right on, especially with your family stuff. Like, it just felt really, and it was good to hear, you know, about my stuff. And ever since then, I've had a really interesting things happen with my grandma. You know what happened when I was camping.
With the blue jay.
With the blue jay, and I had a dream about her.
Yes.
And then last night, I had another, like, really visceral dream with her where
wow.
she spoke to me in German because she was from Austria, and she said, Ich liebe dich, which means I love you in German.
Oh.
It was really interesting. So, lots going on. I think she triggered something in me to be open to those connections.
Yeah, and maybe, yeah, that's what I was going to say. Maybe Fleur just sort of activated something in the spirit world to have them come around. So, I don't know. For me, like, you know, I'm not the total believer in all this stuff.
Yeah.
I'm more bit of the skeptic, but you know what, if nothing else, just the positive commentary about what kind of things to look forward to, and
yes.
you know, what might be happening in our universe out there,
yes.
you know, connections, just feels good,
feels great,
you know.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's get right down to our current guest. Today we have comedian Jacqueline Novak, author of How to Weep in Public. Stand-up comedian Jacqueline is one of Comedy Central's 2015 comics to watch. Recently made her late-night debut on The Late Show with James, is it Corden?
I think so.
Corden, and has been featured at comedy festivals across the country. She is also a self-proclaimed depresso, and in her irreverent and darkly funny new book, How to Weep in Public, Feeble Offerings on Depression from One Who Knows, she offers tongue-in-cheek advice for relishing rock bottom and its many wonders. Novak's comedy album, Quality Notions, was released in 2014. She co-hosts a weekly comedy show at the Cake Shop, which the Village Voice calls achingly hip, and counts Amy Schumer, Lena Dunham, and Mike Birbiglia among her fans. Novak lives in New York. Welcome, Jacqueline.
Jacqueline, are you there?
Hello.
I'm here.
Yay.
I muted myself, a double mute for you guys, just in case my cat meowed or something, and then... And that, you know, it just, it's hard. It's hard to get this stuff right.
Well, you
anyway,
know what? I gotta say.
Create, you know, a moment of terror for you guys.
Yeah, you know what you wanted? You wanted like a grand entrance.
Right,
just admit
right.
it, you know?
Is she
Come
there?
On.
Is she there?
Yeah, but exactly. Exactly. I wanted to, yeah, it's sort of a power thing, you know, just to get you guys kind of riled up for a second, wonder what's about to happen, and then that's when you come in.
Right. It's like that, watching a scary movie, right? It all turns out okay. You get that great sense of relief.
Yes, exactly.
Exactly.
Well, I thought it was
exactly.
me. I thought it was me because I was like, oh my God, did I? And I'm thinking, it's not on mute. It was so funny.
But I can tell you this,
no,
Jacqueline,
yeah.
if your cat meows, very welcome. Kelly and I are both amazing animal lovers like crazy, so
okay,
we can't
good.
Imagine any of our listeners hate animals or they would never listen to us because
we're obsessed.
We talk about
totally.
Them a lot.
Well, as I
oh
always say, I gave birth to my dog, like yes. he came out of the VJ, like full frontal.
Yes.
So
yeah,
welcome.
Let's... I love cats. They're really important. And I also want to go pet horses, as you were saying, and maybe hug a chicken or something. I do think it's really... Oh, and I really want to meet this or go research this psychic.
Oh,
I mean,
yes.
This is all really good stuff that I'm into.
I'm big into that stuff. Are you into psychics?
A combo. Yeah, I mean, I don't have a psychic that I talk to or anything. You know, I don't have that, like, relationship established, but I basically really enjoy anything loosely under the umbrella of the new age.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm always looking for a shaman. always... reading, you know, books about healing. I'm just like, I'm kind of addicted to healing as an extracurricular. It's it's just like, it never has to end. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, even if you're doing pretty good, which I would consider myself, you know, these days, I'm really not, I'm really in great shape in relation to the depression.
Uh-huh.
But I still just, you know, it's like, bring on the healing. When do I, you know, when do you not want to be, get a little healing, right?
Of
it's
course.
Like, any chance I get, anytime I go to a new town, I kind of look around to see, look for the new age shops, the crystal shops, you know, like hoping and just go in and get bathed in a, gong or something, you know, one of those.
I feel like you're speaking my language. This is so me.
Well, and
like,
so both of you, when you're all in town, we'll have my daughter over who is studying Ayurvedics. I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
Amazing.
Yes.
I love how you act as if this is like voodoo. People know who this is. Like,
you know, you would be surprised at
really?
How many people, they roll their eyes
right.
like, what are you talking about?
Oh, Ayurveda?
Ayurveda, what?
Oh, really? So they don't know.
Totally, yeah.
I think we know it here in Southern California and probably in the cosmopolitan
right.
cities because it is hip to be New Agey and to understand these stuff. The funny thing is, it's not New Agey at all. It's like ancient Indian medicine.
Yeah.
So it's fun. Yeah.
So cool.
Oh,
I'm sending
cool.
her my tongue.
I love it.
I'm sending her my tongue.
I'm always trying to figure out my dosha. That's the whole, right?
Yes.
Ayurveda.
Yes,
exactly.
I don't know if I'm a kapha or
a pitta or a vata.
I'm the middle one. I've been told.
I'm a pitta. I really don't. I wish I was a pitta. I don't think I am. I need more fire in the belly, they say.
Wait, so you're probably what I am, the middle one. Like, because the first one is like continual. Like, I think the first one's like continually hungry, skinny, like, you know, like is sort of like weak, so to speak. And then like the next one's like middle, but like, And then the last one's like super fiery and like,
Yeah. I'm definitely like in all these things, in all these different, you know, healing areas where you identify your type. I tend to keep coming up as like, air, wind, you know, it's basically, it's like always that. I'm just like floating around in my head.
What's your sign?
You know, not in my body enough. A Virgo.
Okay.
It's unexpected in some ways. I think, you know, you combine the Virgo with the ADD and you get... a failed perfectionist. So I'm a perfectionist in my head, but I'm incapable of executing it. So I really just, it's a Sisyphus kind of life.
But wait,
I think a lot of my problems stem from these combos.
Okay, so first of all, so I'm open about this. My son has ADHD, and my favorite people on the planet are people with ADD and ADHD, because I think they are the most creative, cool, like interesting people. So I'd
Thank
like to
you.
Hang out.
I'll take it.
Yes, we're
No, it's very interesting. And, you know, just as I'm always reading any kind of self-help or anything, you know, or whatever, I'm very into assessing my diagnoses.
Yeah.
I'm very self-involved, and so I like reading those kinds of things. I read a lot about ADD and ADHD and stuff like that. And I do personally kind of think of it as, you know, regardless of what the cause is, ultimately, in living my life, I just think of it as like a brain style. It's sort of because I've done, at times I'm on, I'll be using medication for it, and other times I'm not. I still have not figured out, you know, which is better for me. It's just like it's two different states, you know what I mean? They both have benefits. There's some benefits to being in the ADD state, you know, maybe creatively or.
Yep.
It's just a different state. It's like, but there are other areas where it's not the best. So it's these things ultimately do become kind of just questions of, you know, particularly with the ADD instead in comparison to something like depression, right? Where it's hard to argue a benefit, to depression. You know, like. At least with the ADD, if I'm in the right circumstance with certain responsibilities I am, you know, letting go of or certain, there is a world in which, like, if everyone was ADD, it would be okay. You know, it's more just you falling short of others' expectations.
Uh-huh. That
I
makes
think
sense.
That, you know, it runs into a problem. It's like, it's a, you know, that's what I find. Kind of losing at least. You know, my sense of time is off. I think I have spoken to, I feel like I just spoke to a friend, but really it's been like 3 weeks and I haven't noticed and they think I hate, but you know, this kind of stuff. It's tough.
You know, also, I think that technology has really affected ADD in lots of people in terms of exacerbating it in those who have it and creating it in those who don't, because it's almost impossible to stay focused on anything. We are required to multitask constantly. We're required to do all these things simultaneously. That's the expectation. So, you know, actually to some degree, people with ADD are more advantageous in that world.
Right. Totally.
That's interesting.
Totally. Yeah. It feels like hopping from thing to thing as it. It's almost like, you know, for me, that ADD feeling, that, you know, that being in that place, it has that hyper-focused quality of kind of like being on this train of thought, and there's different ways to do that. It's like, it's either, you know, one thing to the exclusion of everything else, or it's being in this sort of weird, like, flying around through a bunch of different things, but it feels like one train of thought somehow. It's like, you know, it's a very strange thing. You're doing a lot of things, but there's a focus to that. You know, if I'm on my computer doing a bunch of things at once and someone calls me, I'm like, it feels like they're interrupting, even though I'm already doing like 20 things. It feels like they're interrupting this sort of wild sprint.
It's not your choosing at that moment, right? It's somebody else invading your space when your own brain is creating the space you want to be in.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. It's, I mean, it's just, this stuff is really interesting, and I have thought a lot about, like, you know, a friend of mine said something funny about how he say that, you know, our generation, he's like, we feel entitled to our diagnoses, you know, like we just, we really want to land on them. And like, you know, that can become like such an endless search, much like, you know, the healing, like it's just like trying to find the diagnosis that is, and then you know which books to buy, and then you know which supplements to take, and, you know, and you know how to explain away whatever, you know, is going on in your life. And but it can become this, you know, it's not always so clear. It's not always clear what is causing what, you know, where it's coming from. Is my depression as a result of my ADD or the other way around? Or it's like it's so, I mean, to get to know one's own, like, you know, brain or mode of operating, it's endless. So you're kind of like, I always feel like you're doing the best you can on the go. Like, it's kind of like, you know, we're all playing injured, you know, like it's like, and you just do the best you can along the way. I mean, at some point, I've always thought, my instinct is figure it out. I want to go away on a retreat, figure it all out, fix myself, and then return to the world. And I've attempted that, but, you know, that never exactly happened. So it's sort of like I've really just had to make peace with kind of on the fly, you know, doing the best you can. It's like maybe that's a little Virgo action in there, wanting to go in and, you know, figure it all out, fix it, and then come back to the land of the people. But I'm just sort of free flying here. So
you've grown accepting of your failed perfectionism.
Yes, exactly.
As you put it.
And try to benefit. I mean, that's another thing is, you know, there's this, you know, there's the emphasis with self-help, or just kind of in like a society of you can do anything that you put your mind to. And, there's a lot of emphasis on fixing your flaws, right? And and shoring up the areas of weakness. But then what I've noticed is that a lot of people, there are a lot of people who do really well because they spend no time on that and just sort of completely accept, you know, what they can do and what they do naturally well and then what they don't. And it's like it's such a different model of thinking. Like they're just like, oh yeah, I can't think of an example, but just, oh, I don't do that, I'm terrible at that, so I don't even try. I just let that area go. And it's like there's some power to that too, which I'm intrigued by.
I agree.
Being like, I'm a mess. You know, I mean, like my apartment is a mess. That doesn't necessarily, you know, maybe I just accept that. I don't know. Interesting.
I think we have an easier time with that when we're just accountable to ourselves. I think it becomes harder when we have that stance in relationships, because then you're up against the power struggle of somebody else who might be a neat freak versus, you know, and then how do you negotiate that? But I think what you're saying, the message I'm getting that's so powerful is getting rid of shame. I mean, it's when we can let go of shame.
Oh my God.
That's when at least we're free to be who we are, and we can make improvements where we want to, but we don't have to be so like caught up in all of that, because there's a level of self-acceptance that allows us to have self-love.
Well, and that's why I love.
It's all about shame in the end. It's always shame.
Well, that's what I was telling Dr. Deborah before you came on, is how happy I am that you wrote this book, because I feel like you are taking so much stigma out of the depression and really turning it around.
Totally.
And, like, I completely applaud you. So, yeah.
Thank you. I'm so glad. So, yeah. Yes. That was, like, one of the main goals, because I was very aware of all the ways that this book could go wrong, or you know, a thousand ways I could misrepresent depression, or all these things that kept me up at night during the writing of it. But ultimately, you know, the one piece of sort of peace with it is, all right, you know, writing about it at all in any form with some humor and honesty and whatever, that's got to be, you know, that's got to help someone a little bit at least feel a little better about the whole thing. Absolutely. So I'm really glad. I just go, all right, whatever I did on there, it's at least it's a little bit anti-stigma.
Absolutely, absolutely.
You know, feeling less alone, that kind of thing.
Can you share about your first depression, like when?
Sure.
What that was like for you?
Yeah. Well, you know, it first really, I would say, became a noticeable sort of issue in high school, which I always feel like when I say that, you know, I wonder if people are thinking, well, everyone's full of angst in high school, and, you know, I always wonder if they kind of, like, doubt it, like, how can you tell, you know, there's so much, but it was very clear to me, ultimately, because I had been really into this, like, into self-help type stuff really early, like, in middle school, I got really into Tony Robbins. So I was like, I was very aware of that sort of thing. I was very like, so then when I was first feeling this depression, I would say, I was trying to look at how I was thinking, you know, wrong, or was I not practicing gratitude, or was I, you know, blaming, I don't know, outer circumstances and what, all sorts of things. I was like trying to figure out where my self-help like work was going wrong, and I was like, no, I recognize, you know, that these things are good in my life and this and that, and but I for whatever reason feel very much in my body like I just cannot get up, I cannot make decisions to, you know, like I just remember lying on my floor just like unable to motivate myself, like, or decide, like, whether or not to go and shower, and just, there was just a lot of, it felt very bodily to me, which I think in some ways is a blessing, because, you know, it's easier to parse out that something's happening when it feels so physical, versus just, you know, slowly encroaching depression influencing how your outlook. Right, that then you're in the fog, and it's hard to separate out, you know, you versus the depression, right?
Right.
That's like kind of an acquired, you know, that's a slowly acquired, you know, sense, right? Like that's something I would say now I'm pretty good at over many years, you know, going maybe in and out of these depressions. Now I really have a sense of, I can kind of feel it in my mind. It's almost like in my mind, I feel a little bit less agile. you know, like suddenly, if there are three things that seem that are, you know, seem like problems, I'm overwhelmed. It's like, oh, I can't find any socks. Plus, you know, there's something I have to do later today. Plus, someone just said something slightly, you know, concerning or something, and I'm like. And like suddenly, like the fact of those three things, none of which are so bad on their own, I can't handle them. It's like, so I feel almost like this kind of this lessened ability. I mean, it's almost like. I think a useful way to explain to other people is it's almost like being, if you were dosed, you know, with some kind of drug. And you didn't know you'd been dosed with it, and suddenly you're just kind of in a different state, and you know, having to figure that out
makes sense.
Figure out that something has changed.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's like, you know, I find myself overwhelmed in a very, like, you know, sort of silly way, Like if I were to articulate out loud at the moment why I feel like, you know, I just, why I feel like I have to stop everything or go home or, you know, sit down on a bench and feeling like, so, you know, if I were in a mall, I might feel like, all right, I just gotta sit down on this bench and like, I don't know how I'm going to take the many steps it requires to like go get my car, drive home. I don't know.
A lot of people don't understand depression because unless you're in it, it's really like all of a sudden, you know, you're walking in life and then somebody gives you a 100-pound weight and tells you that while you're doing all these other things, you have to carry this weight. You don't have the muscles for it or the strength for it. And you don't get it. So every little chore or task or responsibility just becomes like
absolutely
monumental.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's, and then there's, yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, it compounds with the shame of being unable to do that. I think, you know, a huge thing is like questioning, you know, you immediately are questioning whether or not this is something, like even if you decide or people tell you or something that you decide, you know, you're struggling with depression, because it feels, because it's such a sort of case of like, oh my God, the monster's inside the house, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, there's constant wondering what is the depression and what's just your inherent, laziness or all those kinds of questions. So you're asking them. The rest of the world might also be asking them because people don't believe, you know, a lot of people don't buy into the idea of depression.
Yep.
Because they think back on times, you know, tough times for themselves and go, well, I got out of that or I did some personal work or, you know, they take responsibility for their own, you know, improvement. And mm-hmm. so they assume that you too, you know, it's the same thing as what they had or were experiencing, but you're just unwilling or unable to, you know, pull yourself up by your bootstraps.
Well, there's probably...
so it's like inner shame, outer shaming, it's plus the weight. It's a tricky situation.
Absolutely. And I think, too, one of the, I would often say, unintentionally cruelest things that somebody who has never experienced depression will often point to, and you said this four-letter word, oh, you're just being lazy, or you're just being avoidant, or something. And the idea that people don't want to accept that depression exists, it's like saying that high blood pressure doesn't exist, or heart conditions don't exist. It's a real entity that some people are plagued by on and off for their entire lives. And it's how do you learn how to navigate through that in a way that you don't get paralyzed by shame, or you don't get paralyzed by the stigma.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it's like, you know, it's one of these things where, you want to remove as many elements from, this is almost how I think of like getting good at depression. Like, if you can't guarantee a complete eradication of it, like let's say, you know, you realize that, you know, this is just something that's going to come and go for you. Whatever that looks like for you, it's like, part of almost getting good at it to me is trying to clear away as many things as possible that are attached to the depression or come about as a result of the depression. But if you can't get rid of that source, you can at least try to get rid of some of the, you know, working to get rid of the shame attached to it or working to get rid of it. It's a little bit like you could figure out some other important stuff as a result of trying to manage the depression. Like, so you can become kind of strong in other areas. I don't know. Like if you, much like that, like you can become, you might become someone who's really good at deconstructing shame and like getting rid of it, you know, like, because you've had to in order to, compensate for this source depression that comes in. So they're sort of like, that's like the hidden benefit. You might become really good at like helping another friend let go of their shame. It's like it just becomes these other skills, these management skills that you become. It's like a weird superhero origin story or something, you know? Like, you know, you were blinded, so you had to develop the other senses.
Right.
You know, it's that's some of my positive spin on it. Since I'm gonna good mood today, but
I don't know how it's true. I don't know how you feel about this, Jacqueline, but I know one of the things that I use to describe depression for some of my patients and myself included, because I've gone through a couple of bouts of depression in my life, where is that it's depression is a state of being, and it's a monster state. It's not your friend.
Yes.
It's not there to help you.
Right.
It's not there to soothe you. So that one of the best things you can do, aside from at times needing medication or extra help, is to practice baby steps and counteraction. If the depression tells you you have to go to sleep for the next 16 hours,
right.
No, instead you set the alarm. No, my body probably only needs 8 hours or 10 hours. And then sort of moving yourself,
right.
Even if you just get awake for 5 minutes and splash water on your face,
yeah.
You're doing something that
right.
says, get the fuck out of my head,
yeah.
monster.
Yeah.
Does that resonate at all?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, because the other thing is, you know, in the feeling of pointlessness, it can be tempting to not take tiny steps because you go, what's the point? You know what I mean?
Sure.
And,
yeah.
But those tiny steps do actually... Because sometimes there is, I think, with depression or you know, or you're in a certain state, there are little trap doors, maybe not out of it, but into a slightly better room within the, you know, the nightmare mansion or whatever.
Yes.
And if you feel around for them, if you do something, you know, you take little steps, what you're making room for the possibility of a slightly different state, just ever so slightly. You know,
yes.
Maybe, you know that you're going to be depressed pretty much for a few days until you're back on your meds or whatever the you know, or you're premenstrual and you know that you are always in a bad state for a few days, you know, during that time or something.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of know you're in it, but there is a matter of feeling around for a little trap door, and it's sort of, that's what taking those tiny steps or actions does. I sometimes think of it as, and this is, you know, particularly when I feel like it's limited, like, okay, this is just going to be for a few days. I think of it sort of like, all right, my mind isn't a trustworthy, you know, friend right now. So instead of, so I'm almost going to actively try to not use it as much as I can. So sometimes yeah. it's sort of like waiting it out while not engaging
the monster.
You know, the monster. Yeah, it's like, It's almost like, you know, if you're depression or you're depressed, so I'll just watch like stupid movies that I find very, or like thrillers, you know, or really outrageous like horror movies. That stuff, just something that takes my attention,
mm-hmm.
you know, in a very basic, like primal way.
Sure.
It's a great way for me personally, when depressed, to get out of that, like, thinking state, not engage my brain at all.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And it's a weird thing because it feels really trustworthy in some way. And I think of it like it's like this car, and it's idling in the driveway. You know, like you can hear the engine, and it's just like out there waiting for you to drive it.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And it's like there's something about like hearing an idling engine or whatever. You feel like, oh, I should probably go get in that car and drive it. So instead, it's like I sit in my, you know, metaphorically in my house and watch the dumb movies, and I just let the depression engine idle away and like get used to it and be like, it's gonna, you know what I mean? Like it's
yes.
calling to me and I'm ignoring it.
I love
that's
that
my
analogy.
Latest metaphor.
I love that analogy. And by the way, we are
yeah.
talking with comedian Jacqueline Novak. She's the author of How to Weep in Public, and I want to know what the reaction has been from people about the
yeah.
book.
Yeah, it's been, you know, it's been really good. I would say for the most part, I worried because it's such a sensitive topic and invites a lot of, you know, arguments and debates about this, just this sort of these questions about medication and all this stuff. So I was worried that that I might have to deal with a lot of really, you know, severe reactions. But for the most part, the people that speak out about it or tweet at me, that sort of thing, are really seem really just to respond in the way that was what I was most concerned about, which was in wanting was just sort of feeling less alone, or you know, the kind of anti-stigma. That's
mm-hmm.
really what people have said, and feeling like just kind of the book is kind of a friend, which is exactly what I, you know, what I want.
So yes.
That's the best part. Yeah, that's like, and it's interesting because also it's interesting to hear like people who are not depressed who have read it say that it gives them permission. There's a lot of permission giving in the book, you know, like permission to be imperfect, permission to be, you know, whatever the state that your depression puts you in, you know, to still be in the world with that or whatever. And I think some of the permission, you know, like it's comforting to people even who do not suffer with that. Sort of, there's some free, it's that muscle, it's that like muscle of anti-shame that develops in reaction to the depression as necessity, but then other people do find kind of like heartening. Like if I, you know, because in there I try to take apart some of the thoughts that I would have during, you know, a depression. I try to imagine like, all right, you're probably lying there on the ground or, you know, lying there on the floor of your place or something. Thinking about all the time, you know, the minutes ticking by while other people are getting things done in their lives and, you know, oh my God, you know, I try to go into those kind of like depressing thoughts and then sort of pick them apart and say like, why actually it's totally fine that, you know, you're lying on the floor or whatever.
Yes.
And that kind of stuff, I think those kinds of thoughts that may be all consuming to someone struggling with depression are still like thoughts that pop up and disturb people who are not suffering from depression. So that's like the good thing is that those people too are finding some value in the book, which I hope the publishers, you know, are probably happy about too. Wider audience. It's all
of course.
About the wider
yeah,
audience.
Exactly.
Well, I think it'd be really helpful too if you could share with us and our listeners some of the really most poignant moments in your help from depression that just really stood out mm-hmm. as things that like maybe, I don't know if they have universal appeal to people, but anything that mm-hmm. gives somebody hope in those moments of hopelessness and despair.
Yeah. Let's see. Well, I think, you know, I remember one time my dad said something to me about how, like, you know, forgiveness and self-forgiveness is like, you know, where it's at. And the point, you know, he was making at the time to me was that no matter what you're saying to yourself in your mind or what the depression monster is saying to you in your mind about yourself, you know, just going, you know, and I forgive myself for that. Mm-hmm. And I forgive myself for that. It's like no matter what statement the depressed brain makes, you know, saying I forgive myself, it's like it's an answer for everything. It, you know what I mean? Like it can't be argued with. And I found that sort of like a clever hack against the depression mind.
Yeah.
'Cause there's sort of a quality of, you know, don't argue with the devil always wins. And that's a little bit what it's like, I think, in your own mind when you're depressed. So things like that that are very, so that was a big one for me, just focusing again and again on I forgive myself, mm-hmm. You know, and it's a strange thing, but there was some power to that for me. So that was a big one, I'd say.
Well, you definitely mentioned...
What are some poignant moments? Let's see. I'm thinking.
I know you mentioned getting on yourself with movies and things like that.
It might just be more of a process, really. Maybe that's an unfair question because it may not have been one of those aha moments and simply just like,
oh, right.
building
no,
up
right,
all of
totally.
These things together that over time, you know, it's like, you know, what do they say? Rome was not built in a day. Depression can be a very long-lasting, ugly
right.
experience internally. And so it's not usually going to just... snap out of it
right
one day.
Right
totally yeah I mean yeah I think so that's why yeah it's like it is you know there's it's sort of almost like there's no way out and there's a million ways out or so, you know simultaneously
right,
right? So I think a big piece is because there is that all or nothing thinking going
yes.
on with depression right and so there is sort of this oh I would always lie there and try to figure out the way out, you know,
mm-hmm.
or the thought or the idea that I could cling to that was going to like you know, launch me out of depression, and that if I could hold on to that thought, you know, I'd be immune. And I think instead it's more like, and I would think I would come across that maybe from something in a self-help book, whatever it was, and sort of get these like emotional dollar signs in my eyes, you know, like that kind of like, oh, I finally figured it out. I figured out how I'm going to escape pain forever, or depression or whatever. And I think instead being like sort of recognizing that you're in a state or in, you know, kind of in this dream or this nightmare a little bit, or that you have this lens on, you know, that everything looks a certain way, but also, you know, realizing that instead of, okay, because it looks like this, I just have to shut down. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like finding ways to live inside of that dream. It's like, even if you know this is a depression illusion, it's where you are right now. So what can you do inside it that, that will make it tolerable?
That I don't know. That makes sense.
That's sort of nightmarish, but oddly was comforting to me.
That makes complete sense. Completely.
I think we need to spend a little time, because I think it's so important. A lot of people who have never experienced depression themselves, but are in relationship with somebody who is depressed, and what things to say and what things not to say, because the one we talked about calling someone lazy is just not helpful. And at the same time, what often happens with depressed people is they make promises because they don't want to disappoint people. And so then all of a sudden their pile of lack of accountability continues to grow, which feeds the shame. And then the people around them are disappointed. They get angry. They push them away. They isolate more. It's just such a vicious pattern. So I'd love to hear your thoughts about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, I found that I find disappointing other people so unpleasant that, and it became such a, you know, such a pattern of, I just got to the point where I never made plans with anybody because I didn't trust my ability to show up on a future date. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I didn't trust that 2 weeks from now I will want to go to lunch, you know?
Right.
And so I basically stopped making plans, and because you'd rather, you know, I would rather just be completely absent or whatever than risk disappointing people. And it was almost, you know, and then it would become the anxiety of what if, you know, the anxiety of will I be up for going to this thing, then it became like, then I really didn't want to go. It just, you know, so for a really long time, my calendar was just completely empty, like purposefully. And I definitely saw, I see it as a sign of kind of my own, you know, improvement from where I was, that I have things on my calendar now and I pretty much do show up for them.
That's great.
But that thing with other people, I mean, I sort of jokingly recommend in my book getting more depressed friends, because
they understand.
There's like, it's, you know, these no expectation friendships where you know, you just, maybe you don't ever go hang out, but you text a lot because that's easy and you can do it from your bed or whatever. But there is, I think, I mean, this is something that's an endless question, but, and also kind of a question with the ADD, but, you know, the same thing. But saying, I think, what am I trying to say? It's really hard to say this is kind of how I am, or at least this is how I am these days. And, you know, I think allowing people to have their reaction to it, right? Not everyone wants to be friends with somebody who can't, you know, who flakes out all the time, as they say. And it's like, people are allowed to not like that and go their own way. And so that can be very hard. But I've definitely had to, at times in my life, say, yeah, like, I'm really sorry I didn't call you back. Like, I'm just in that kind of place right now where I am... I'm not calling people back, or I'm, you know, I'm in a hole, and I respect if that's intolerable to you, and you know what I mean? And if you want to cut me off or whatever, like, it's when it gets tricky is then when people go, well, I don't want to cut you off, I just want you to change. And that's, you know, that's very, because I get into it all the time wondering, all right, well, can I, then you make a false promise, you know, go, I'm going to do it this time, then you disappoint again, and it's a greater offense. So this is something I'm still trying to figure out, you know, what are this question of limitations and adjustments, and how many relationships can you have in your adult life that that you have to, you know, quote, work on, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, if you're married or you're in a, you know, like I have a boyfriend and I have siblings and parents, and those are relationships that are, you know, for life. And so I'm going to be working on them. And it's like, I don't know. It's a really strange thing to figure out. And I'm kind of getting off track.
Well, I think it's again where that shame can become so paralyzing. And when you can get to the space of just saying, okay, I accept that I'm in a depression. I do accept that I care about the people in my life and these people care about me. What's the minimum that I can do that doesn't, you know, push me too far, that maybe could say to my loved ones, you know, I'm going through a really hard time. I do love it that you keep reaching out to me and saying hi, because it does mean something to me. I'm not always going to be responsive. If we make this plan, would it really offend you if I didn't show up, because then I won't make it? But if you're okay with me, you know, doing the best I can, or maybe a modified thing, then I would really appreciate that. And I think if we can just develop that voice, most people with compassion and love are going to go, yeah, I think I can work with that, you know, but it's
absolutely
hard.
Absolutely. It's, you know, it's something I find, it's like figuring out that language or those, you know, literally figuring out those kinds of statements, like the one you just said, are become like these tools, and until you have the language,
I know it sounds so easy.
I wanted to put in, like, the book would be, you know, almost those kinds of things for people's use. It's not particularly funny, so I didn't. But you know, but sort of like, okay, here's a reasonable email you can send to explain your situation when you're, you know, too depressed to come up with how to explain it. But it's I think people are for the most part pretty compassionate, and if they're, you know, if they're not, then buzz off, right? I mean,
exactly, right? What do you need a non-compassionate person for in your life if you have these struggles?
Yeah,
exactly. You don't want people adding to your shame and your already difficult momentum, but people who can be soothing. But also, I think when you hit the key word before too, really monitoring your own expectations of what you you believe other people can fulfill, because but putting yourself in somebody else's shoes, you know, most people don't want to be stood up, you know, week after week after
week.
Totally. So it becomes a hard challenge. And you don't want to isolate, because you just isolating and not filling up your calendar is also feeds
dangerous.
The depression.
Exactly.
So I think that's where getting a counselor or somebody to help you, you know, navigate through some of those communication patterns can be very powerful.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I definitely. But the times that, you know, you successfully communicate those sorts of things, you feel like a real it's kind of a sigh of relief. It's like, oh, this felt like there was no solution here, and then somehow that kind of language really opens it up. It's huge.
Well, Jacqueline,
that's a good book. You should write a book like that.
I have written a few, actually.
Yeah, right.
Jacqueline, you have been amazing. We're almost out of time. Can you tell people where to find your book, How to Weep in Public, and website and all that good stuff?
Yeah, so my website is JokesNovak, N-O-V-A-K, just because it's a little easier sometimes than figuring out Jacqueline and Novak and all that kind of stuff. But if you search any misspelling version of Jacqueline Novak, you should get to me. My Twitter is just my full name, Jacqueline Novak. I just put out a little web series that I think you guys would like. It's the same title, How to Weep in Public, on Refinery 29. It's me talking to interesting people about depression.
Oh, cool. Nice. Definitely.
And my book is available, you know, all the usual places, the bookstores, Amazon, the iBooks, all that stuff. And if anyone wants to check out my comedy album, it's called Quality Notions. So there's that too. And that's that's pretty much it right now.
Thank you
You're
so
amazing.
Much.
You're amazing. Thank you so
much.
Thanks
for sharing your personal
Thank you
story
guys.
About that. Yeah,
yeah.
Really appreciate it. Have a great day,
yeah.
Jacqueline.
You
okay.
too.
Yeah, don't go away, listeners, because we do want to fill you in on next week's show. We're going to have Susan Holland, the Executive Director of Cancer Schmancer. Although we are not going to be focusing as much on her role at that and what an interesting life she's had, because we will have a follow-up guest a couple weeks after. We will have Fran Drescher also.
Yes.
So we're very excited. She's had a really interesting life, and she was a friend of mine in high school that we just recently reconnected. So I'm very excited about that. And Kelly, they can find us at docandtherapist.com, doc, and therapist.com. And our Twitter is docandtherapist without the .com. And you've been listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, and we love you all. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.